Hello and welcome to episode 45 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, known as Grundislav on the internets and parts unknown, and with me as always...
Hello, Grundislav and Francisco. I am known as Ben Chandler. How are you this morning?
I am well. How are you?
I'm well. Before we start the podcast proper, yes. I think we should give a little shout out to the second AGS bake sale, which is currently running.
Yes, you're right. We should.
Oh, this time the proceeds are going towards the AGS server for the forums. So, you know, it's a great place. It's sort of, it's how we met. It's how all this game-making malarkey started. It's been the home of people such as Aaron Robinson and Dave Gilbert and Ben Croshaw and, you know, Vince 12 and all those people. So, you know, it's a great place.
Yeah.
If you want to get some little indie games and support a thriving community of creative people, go and check out the AGS bake sale.
Indeed. It was
You can find on Google, because let's face it, anybody who can listen to a podcast is savvy enough to Google a webpage.
I would hope so.
Yeah. So, go and do that. Anyway.
Good.
What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Let's see. Well, what am I usually up to on this thing?
Playing video games and making video games.
Well, then, that's exactly what I've been up to.
Good. What have you been playing?
I've been playing Grand Theft Auto 5.
How are you finding it?
I'm finding it entertaining.
Good. I mean, did you see my tweet?
I did see your tweet, and I agreed with it. I think that I'd be interested to see a Grand Theft Auto game with a female protagonist.
Or you know, like just someone different.
Yeah, someone.
I want to play. You know what I miss? You know what I miss from San Andreas?
What's that?
And I thought San Andreas was okay. I wasn't a huge fan, but I miss being able to be really fat. Well, I thought that was great.
It's funny because
they're all, everyone you play is like fit, middle class, middle aged.
Well, no, I mean, not really. I mean, like you have the three characters. One is like a overweight, not really overweight, but he's not really.
I'm talking like obese.
I know. You're talking obese.
No, I'm talking Daniel Lambert.
Who?
Daniel Lambert.
Who's Daniel Lambert?
Google Daniel Lambert after this podcast.
I don't want to if he's a big fat guy.
Maximize the window because he's dead, allowed to pick on him. He fell through his own coffin when they tried to bury him through the bottom of his coffin.
That guy, okay, I know who Daniel. Okay, I know.
How can you forget? Well, he has a name like Daniel Lambert.
It's a very mundane name, to be fair. If it was like Fatty McFatterson, I would remember it. But anyway, so I mean, like, you know, Michael's a middle class guy, but he's only a middle class guy because he's been put in that situation. He's not a fit guy. He's a little chubby, and Franklin too. Like, so they make fun of him. His skinny friend makes fun of him for being fat. And Trevor, who I haven't started playing as yet, is like a skinny redneck. So, you know, they're not like fit middle class guys. But what's funny is that they've brought back the customization.
Well, I'd say they're more middle class than like, I'm very rich. Or, you know, someone that's like digging through bins for food. That's who I'd like to play as. Because if you're digging through bins for food, you've got a reason to steal shit.
Well, Nico was kind of digging through bins for food, wasn't he?
Well, I mean, he was like for the first 2 seconds of the game.
He was right off the boat, and then I mean, you're not going to be digging for bins for food if you rob a bank right off the bat.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I mean, rich people have no reason to steal.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what you mean, and I understand, and I think that there should be more diversity, but at the same time, it's kind of hard to fit diversity into a story stereotype or archetype like that.
It is not.
I think it might. I think it is. I mean, like, you know.
I disagree.
Okay.
But I just don't think they've tried. Well, I mean, look at Bully. Bully was a Grand Theft Auto Rise and Fall story, exactly the same. Just the setting was different.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah. But anyway, what I think is funny is that they've brought back most of the customization options from San Andreas. You can customize your car. You can get different haircuts. You can buy different clothes.
Well, you could do some of that in 4.
Yeah, true. But you couldn't get haircuts in 4, which was Weird. But and yeah, but you can't eat, you can't get fat, and you can't exercise.
Oh man, I miss getting fat. That was my favorite thing, is that I could turn into a big chubby guy and like run around, like sprint around the thing and like have him puff out and be like, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. But yeah, so I've been playing Grand Theft Auto 5 a little bit, and I have to say that Rockstar really outdo themselves with every game that they do. Like, their maps always get really unmanageably big, and I can't believe that they can fit all of that on one Blu-ray. Especially considering that, like...
A double-layer Blu-ray is pretty big.
That's true.
It holds a lot of data.
But especially considering, like, the size of the map of 5 compared to 4, 4 looks tiny now. Which is weird, because 4 at the time was like, oh my god, this is huge. But, like, you get into a helicopter and you go up a little bit and you're like, oh, that's not that big. But, you know, whatever. They were getting used to the new thing. They didn't know their limitations, etc., etc., etc. It just makes me sad that the next GTA game is going to definitely probably be next gen. So,
well, it makes me sad that, you know, that they can do all this stuff with like enormous maps and everything like that, and you've now got 3 playable characters, and I can't play as a woman.
Yeah, well, you can if you play GTA Online, but it's not.
Yeah,
same.
But that's not, dude.
I know.
That's like saying, oh, you know, you can. Yeah, no, that's not it. No.
Well, maybe
that
next
doesn't
time.
Even qualify as an answer.
Maybe
not even a response.
Maybe next game they'll finally let you play as a woman.
It's not hard.
No, it's not.
You know, but apparently it is for Rockstar. Have they had a single female protagonist in any of their games yet?
I don't believe they have. No.
Well, that's a bit shit, isn't it? Well, it is.
Yeah. I know. What can I tell you?
You can tell me that they're lazy and they're not trying very hard to put diversity into their games, and I'll agree with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of my soapbox.
What have you been up to?
I've been playing games and making games.
Really?
And I'm painting.
Good.
Right now, currently.
I know you're painting
because
a cat.
It's Mother's Day tomorrow, and my mother likes Egyptian things and cats, so
you
I
know,
thought, well,
I had a feeling that's what you were painting for.
Yeah, last weekend I painted a butterfly for my grandma's birthday, and this weekend I'm painting a cat for Mother's Day for my mother.
That's good.
Funnily enough. So yeah, so it'll be a nice little treat, hopefully, if I can get it to look nice, which it's coming along.
Yeah,
slowly.
From what I've seen that you've posted on Twitter, it's looking pretty good.
It's getting there. It needs a bit of work, but that's painting for you.
Yeah. Anyway,
so
what
yeah.
have you been playing? Tell me about the diverse list of games. Speaking of diversity in games.
I'm a diverse guy, you know. You've seen me, like, when I go to a sandwich shop, I get a different sandwich every time. When I play games, I play different games all the time. So I've been playing Doom because I woke up yesterday morning from a dream that about Doom, and I was just like, man, you know what's an amazing game? Doom. I need to play Doom again. And so I intended to play, like, a little tiny bit of Doom, and that would be it. And as of now, I've nearly finished a complete playthrough of it. So
I like the fact that you have dreams about Doom. That's
a good game.
That just tells me everything I need to know about you. Not that I didn't already know.
But... Doom's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Doom's like, man, Doom is just as good now as it was when I was a kid. And I love Doom.
I had a dream last night about bottle feeding kittens.
Well, that's your childhood and a thing, isn't it?
I have no idea.
Maybe, you know.
I don't know what it means.
Maybe kids are in your future. Maybe it's a sign.
I hope not.
What would you name your firstborn?
Asshole. I could say, hey, asshole, get over here. And laugh. And have him bring me drinks.
You turn out to be just like your old man.
No. My old man has problems, but he never did that, thankfully.
Well, let's face it, we've all got problems.
Well,
so
some more than others. Anyway.
And Doom hasn't changed over the years, but I've changed, but I still go back to it every
now
and then for that same old kick. And
that's really
never
profound.
Fails to satisfy, you know.
That's really profound. I've changed, but Doom hasn't. It wow. still loves me. Ooh.
How is that profound?
I don't know. I'm just being an asshole. Oh, okay. My self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I also finished Super Motherlode, which is kind of weird because I'd got to the last boss battle and it kind of sucked, so I was like, oh, this is boring. It's not that it's a hard battle, it's just that if you fail it, you have to go through like a bunch of like, you have to just, it takes you ages to get back to the boss battle from the last checkpoint. So I was like, blah.
Yeah.
Blah, you know? And so.
That reminds me of my awful experience with Dragon Warrior on the NES. But we won't talk about that.
Well, but see, this is a game released this year, so, you know, it's harder to excuse it.
Yeah.
You know, people have learned their lessons since the old days of past.
I don't know about that.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
I can cite a few games that go against that point, but okay. Please continue.
We'll talk about that later. But okay. Yeah, so I finished that. I got a game called Farming World, which is a little bit like Sim Farm, but with modern graphics. And that's pretty good. That's like, it's a little more casual than a Sim Farm, but I'm enjoying it. It's got, every review on Steam is negative, so screw everyone in the entire world, you're wrong.
You really are enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
You really are, because I've heard you play over Skype, and you like making all the farm noises.
Yeah, I'm a simple guy. Tractors amuse me, you know?
They certainly do. Which is odd. Tractors are my... It's odd that tractors amuse you, to be quite frank.
Okay.
I mean, you grew up and you live on a farm. Presumably you see tractors all the time. Yes, they do.
See, dude, you've lived in cities your whole life and you're playing a game about a city. You're playing Grand Theft Auto. What's the difference?
Yeah, but Grand Theft Auto doesn't amuse me like tractors do to you.
Yeah, well, I don't care about that.
I didn't realize you were part tractor.
I am part tractor. It all makes sense now.
Oh, man, you know how you just laughed about... I have to tell you something. Yesterday, I decided, because this week most of my coworkers are out of town, and so I didn't get to co-work on Thursday. So I was like, you know, I need to get out of my apartment. So I called up my cousins who live in New Jersey, and
man, Jersey! Did you really succumb to New Jersey and go there?
Yeah, I do. But
I thought you were a cool guy. What happened?
Necessity sometimes outweighs coolness.
Yeah, you're slipping, Gonzalo.
Wait a minute. What the hell are you talking about? You don't even know. You can't talk about New Jersey like you're some kind of.
I can talk about whatever I want to.
Yeah. Whatever. Anyway. So I called up my cousin and I was like, "Hey, listen, you're always at home, you know, doing your thing. I'm at home working.
Being a bum.
Well, studying music, as they do.
Bro, dude, I've played in bands and been a bum.
I know. Anyway, so I was like, hey, how about I come over and we co-work? And he was like, okay, fine. So I went over and I spent most of the day and the night and the evening over there. And when his brother got home from work, they cooked dinner and we were sitting around the dinner table and we were just talking and stuff. And, you know, these are my cousins. I grew up with them. And, like, you know, we're three 32-year-old men sitting around a table just trying to crack each other up by making fart jokes. And I was just like, well, some things never change.
Man, I can make my parents laugh with fart noises.
Yeah, that was
not even jokes, not even anything funny, just like making the sound of a gassy butt with my mouth. they laugh at that, like with tears coming out of their mouth because I don't stop. I just constantly...
We were having a fun time because they want to make a game. Because they see me working on my game, so they're like, "Oh, we need to make some money. We need to make a game." So they want to make this game about. First, they wanted to make a game called Bar Brawl, where you like, it's like a silly fighter game where it's like basically the historical League of Bouncy boxing, except in a bar.
Okay.
And then last night they wanted to make some sort of like political satire game where it's like, you know, Mortal Kombat type thing, but with like parodies of well-known political figures. So they were
Dick Cheney with like the accidental headshot.
Oh, we didn't think about that. No, but we were coming up with stupid names for all the people. Like their favorite one was Funnest Abe instead of Honest Abe, and basically it was Abraham Lincoln wearing a pair of tidy whities with his like coat of with the tails over it, and then he has his top hat, and then his attack. His special attack is that a stripper with nipple tassels comes out the top of his... Like, the top of his top hat opens up and goes... Boop, and a stripper with tassels comes out. And his eyes go... Wah! Like, it was... You had to be there. But it was pretty funny. Okay.
Well, I'd play it, but to be fair, I'll play anything,
yeah.
So...
Yeah. And then we also Harmonica Lewinsky, because, you know, do you suck or blow, et cetera, et cetera. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we were having a good old time just, like, cracking each other up, making fart noises and talking about stupid political parodies. But anyway, enough about my personal life. I interrupted you.
Yeah, I've also... I've been playing... Well, I was playing Sweezy Gunner.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a game on Steam where you shoot stuff, basically. And I was enjoying it, and then...
It sounds to me like there's a big butt coming.
And I lost half of my progress.
Oh, no.
So, I don't know. I don't know if I'm motivated enough to go back and do it all again.
Aww.
Yeah, that's me. You're good.
Mm-hmm.
You sound sad there, mate.
You're the one that's sad. Mate.
Okay, and then I also got Armored Hunter Gunhound EX.
What the hell title is that?
That plays exactly how the title sounds.
Thank God. I'd be disappointed if not.
Yeah, so that's basically Metal Slug, but harder to control.
Mm.
So yeah, that's interesting, but it's yeah, I've only done like one of the missions so far. It's pretty tough. I've got a lot of games to play. I'm a busy guy.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, another glimpse into my personal life. Remember the other day I told you about how I had ordered Sherlock Holmes? I had won a copy of the old Sherlock Holmes game on eBay. And there was a little snafu with the delivery.
Correct.
Well, it turns out that the mailman, instead of buzzing my apartment like a normal mailman should, just decided to leave it with the super without saying anything. So
Elvis is good value.
Yeah, so I have to go pick up my package from Super Elvis at some point today.
Dude, send him a text message just to see what he says back.
I'm not gonna send him a text message. Besides, it was his wife that told me. I ran into her at the subway station.
But Super Elvis's text messages are excellent.
Yeah, they are, but anyway.
My text messages are expensive. Look, think of all the amusement you'll get out of it.
Yeah, just because I can get a text or two in broken English, you're a racist.
Anyway. I'm not a racist. Dude, honestly, if a white person talked funny, I'd laugh at them.
Mm.
It's not about being racist.
Yeah, it's about being speechist.
Yep.
Anyway, let's talk about some different things on the podcast today in the spirit of diversity.
I want to talk about video games. Sorry.
I meant talk about video games, but I meant like not just stick to one subject. I meant like talk about.
Oh, dude, that's like a person that's had sweets for like 3 days straight and been like, you know what? I need something different in my life. This is too much. I'm going to have a strawberry streak sweet for the first time in these 3 days.
Well, yeah, that's like saying, yeah, I've been eating chocolate for the past 3 days. Let me have some marshmallows and some Jolly Ranchers.
Man, Jolly Ranchers are good. Don't mention them. I'll be sad now.
They are good. I still have a bag full of watermelon in my cabinet.
Eaten all the ones you sent
me. I know. You ate them a long time ago. Anyway,
they're delicious.
Mm-hmm, I know. Anyway, so first let's talk about something we just touched upon while we were having our little video game conversation, and that is, new games from old...
I have no idea what you're referring to.
I'm talking about new games from old developers that people hate.
Yeah,
not
a lot
moving
of
on.
Kickstarter pledges and old adventure game fans are quite disappointed currently. I mean, I've seen some people being really, really defensive of these games, and then I've seen some other people just be utterly, utterly, utterly disappointed.
Yes,
and I don't want to say anything, you know, because, like, dude, I make games, and not all of them are good, and so, you know, people make bad games, it happens, but sometimes people haven't learned from their mistakes.
Yeah, why do you think that is? Let's take a little philosophical viewpoint here. Why do you think it is that, you know, these old developers who have more or less retired and have now come back thanks to Kickstarter are still sticking to these old tropes of bad game design and just, you know, not really... It seems like they're out of touch. And don't...
Out of time.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't going to beat me to that.
I wasn't going to do it because I'm above that sort of thing.
You're above shit. I think there's a couple of things. First of all, I think a lot of these people don't play adventure games. I think they don't play at least modern games, and so they don't see what's changed since they've been gone. They don't see how the genre's changed, how people have moved on, you know? Mm. I think also we're more forgiving back in the 90s than we are now. Like, we were more patient because we had less games to choose from. They were more expensive. So, you know, these days you've got like 60 games sitting there waiting for you to play it. Back then you had like three.
Yeah. And I guess we didn't really know better back then.
We hadn't seen it done differently. So we put up with the shit, you know?
Yeah.
This is like people come back in and be like, oh, but, you know, something's been changed and we're used to the change now. And people are coming back in and go, oh, hey, this is a thing. And, you know, so
yeah, here's a maze.
Yeah, and also
like mazes, right?
One thing that really worries me is that these people think, well, our fans are kickstarting us. We want to make a game that pleases our fans, and our fans want the same game they played back in 1994.
Yeah,
you know. So that's one thing that worries me. I can't say for sure. And dude, I haven't played any of these Kickstarter adventures because, you know, they don't come on CDs, and I can't buy them and play them because they're all so big. But I've looked at a lot of stuff, and I've just gone, you know what? This honestly doesn't interest me. And
I've played one, and I've seen a Let's Play of another, and I've been reading Twitter rants about a third. And yeah. It seems like the only one that's been doing well, and when I say well, I mean that's been well-received, has been Broken Age, which I haven't played or watched a Let's Play of either because I'm waiting for the second part to come out to actually buy it and play it.
But yeah, don't Let's Play. That'd be silly. That'd be foolish. It would be spoilery.
But Tim Schafer seems to be the only designer, but probably because he's the only one that's remained active all these years.
And also, Tim Schafer's a good designer.
Yeah, but he seems to be the only one that remembers. Even Ron Gilbert, like The Cave, was kind of lukewarmly received. I enjoyed The Cave.
Well, what games has Ron Gilbert made, dude?
Well, aside from all the putt-putt games that he made after a while.
Right, so look, he made Maniac Mansion.
Yeah.
If you made Maniac Mansion now, dressed up with modern graphics and tried to sell it to people, what do you think people would say?
This game sucks.
Well, of course they would say it sucks, because at the time, Maniac Mansion was amazing because you had, like, this game you could just walk around and just do all these things, you know?
Yeah.
I remember reading an article by someone who started playing it, and they were talking about, like, all the cool stuff you could do, and at the time it seemed amazing. But now, like, you play Maniac Mansion now, and you're like, this hasn't aged that great.
Mm.
You know? He made Secret of Monkey Island 1 and 2, but I'm pretty sure a lot of the good parts of that were also done by other people.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Well, I mean, I don't know, but there was, you know, Tim Schafer had a hand in them, and, you know, he wasn't the only... There was a bunch of people that worked on that.
Sure.
So, you know, and I don't want to knock Ron Gilbert. I got nothing against the dude. You know, he created Scum. He did us all a favor, you know. Without him, we wouldn't be here.
Mm.
But it's a design mindset that is kind of it's not sort of current anymore.
Yeah,
you know, and I haven't played The Cave, so I don't get to judge it. But I have played Total Annihilation, and that was pretty good, and he worked on that. So, you know, there's a thing.
Yeah.
I'll say this: Deathspank is one of the most boring games I've ever played in my entire life. It was awful.
Well, I didn't play Deathspank, and I've only heard you say terrible things about it, so I don't think I'll be checking it out anytime soon.
Yeah, it was just utterly bland, you know?
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, so, look, I can't really say much about Ron Gilbert, but, you know, he made Monkey Island, I guess.
Let's talk about... I like this. Let's talk about Jim Walls.
Look, Jim Walls' Kickstarter...
I like talking about Jim Walls.
I don't want to say too much about it, all right, because it's been and gone and it's failed and everything like that. But Jim Walls' Kickstarter stank of naivety.
That was me, sorry.
Mm. It absolutely reeked of naivety, of bandwagon jumping and of cash cow milking. That's it seemed like to me.
It absolutely was. It absolutely was. But see, the thing about Jim Walls was, it's funny because...
Well, look, maybe Jim Walls did really believe in the design that he was doing, and some of the ideas look cool. But come on, man. Like, one look at the Kickstarter and you just go, well, okay, that's nice. I'll pin it on the fridge, I guess. But when you've gone home to your mum, I'm going to throw it in the trash.
The thing I thought was funny about Jim Walls coming out of the woodwork to be like, hey, I'm going to make a new game, because that's what Jim Walls sounds like.
Pretty much.
Is like, you know, he saw that all the old Sierra people were coming back, and he was like, well, I kind of made games for them too. Maybe I can come. That's like if, you know, like, the Beatles were, like, still alive, and they were like, hey,
well,
we're gonna... Let's say all four Beatles were alive, and each of them individually was like, hey, we're gonna kickstart our own solo albums. And everyone was
but they're
like,
English, so they'd be like, all right then, love.
Well, they're also from Liverpool, so they'd be like, okay, we're gonna kickstart our own solo albums now. So then, that's like, right. You know, people would be like, individually, because, you know, everyone's like, oh, the Beatles together are great, solo, meh. I think Wings is fucking awful. And
John, I know what you think of Wings. And John, I mentioned Wings to you the other day, and the reaction I got surprised me.
Yeah, and John Lennon's solo stuff, meh. So, you know, we can all... And Ringo, let's not even talk about
well,
Ringo.
Well, dude, come on, it's Ringo.
I know. So anyway, I think we
I'm going to say this.
Ringo
is my favorite Beatle just because of his fake name.
Yeah, I know. But anyway...
I love the name Ringo stuff.
Let me finish my terrible analogy. So let's pretend for a minute that the Beatles were all alive and they all individually decided that they were going to fund a solo album through Kickstarter. And, you know, Paul's album... did okay, but people were like, eh, whatever, you know, we've heard better. It's old 60s stuff that we need to move on. And John's album was like, slightly less well-received. And George and Ringo's album were just terrible. And then Pete Best was like, hey, I'll do one too!
Yeah.
that's pretty much exactly it.
but Jim Walls was very much one of the Sierra people. He wasn't like some background dude.
He you was know, totally he was, a background dude. He was, he, you know, I bet you the
he
only...
made how many of the Police Quest games?
Three of them, but you know, I bet
there
you...
There you go.
But he didn't know
how
the first...
How many games did Ron Gilbert make for LucasArts?
More than three.
Did he?
Yeah, he made Maniac Mansion. He had something to do with Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I'm pretty sure. He made the first two Monkey Islands. Anyway, my point is, Ron Gilbert was a game designer. He joined the company as a game designer. Jim Walls came on as a consultant because they were like, oh, we're going to make a realistic police game. We need a policeman. And he just happened to be the first cop. My theory, and I discussed this with Dave and Janet Gilbert, and we agreed to this, is that Ken Williams was speeding down the Coarse Gold Freeway, and traffic cop Jim Walls pulled him over. And Ken Williams was like, hey, I got a speeding ticket. Roberta's going to kill me. Hey, Jim Walls, you want to make a game? And Jim Walls was like, okay, I'll get rid of your speeding ticket if you let me make a game. And that's how Police Quest was made.
I got something to add to this.
What's
about
that?
Jim Walls' game design.
What is that?
It is this, that if Police Quest is an accurate police officer simulation and representative of real life, then there would be no living police officers today. Not one would have survived the first day.
Every time
not
they
one.
Would...
Well, because, no, let me tell you this. If they my took... experience with Police Quest is this. Dying. And the same with that Blue Force. Although, at Blue Force, I got to the bit where I took some woman home to my grandma or something like that for dinner, and I was like, yeah, I'm done. That's it.
Yeah, man, what's that all about? Cops aren't supposed to take civilians home for dinner. That's like, completely unethical.
That is completely unethical. I was like, well, this is wrong. So...
Not only that,
that's all I'm saying. If Police Quest really is realistic, then dude, police officers are tough.
Man, if you die,
they've survived some shit.
If you die of embarrassment just from taking off your clothes, come on. I know I referenced this last podcast, but please, that's the worst death ever. Although that was totally Al Lowe's doing. I know that.
Dude, you don't die from taking your clothes off in public. Trust me.
Yeah, trust.
It doesn't happen.
Trust me.
Well, there you go. We know.
Well, you might die if like you get your dick bitten off by a shark.
In the yes, you'll die.
Well, that water was pretty cold, man.
Yeah, it was alright.
Yeah. Anyway,
okay. Now it was cold.
Yes, it was. Anyway, but yeah, like Jim Walls didn't know the first thing about game design. He was just like, oh, I guess we gotta do things by the book, and he did.
You make him sound like Bubba.
Tears? But have you heard
of it? You know what I hate, Ken?
You know,
I hate it when people try to avoid their speeding tickets.
That's the thing, too.
By giving me a job in game design. But alright, I'll do it!
That's the thing, too. He was a traffic cop. He wasn't even, like, a real police officer.
He wasn't, like, a detective or anything.
No!
Like that.
He wasn't a detective. And yet, he made Sonny Bonds, like, a detective, which, yeah. I don't know.
Well, he was living the dream. He was trying to act out his fantasies.
I guess he was trying to.
I wonder if he was a good cop. I wonder if he was like an actually good cop, or if like people found out they're like, dude, Jim's making a thing about how to be a police officer, and they're like,
oh yeah, right. That's like
all the people. Not old Jim. Go on. Maybe he'll buy us donuts if the game does any good.
That's like Ben Chandler making a game about how not to be a cat.
That's not even... No. That's not even approaching funny.
It is to me.
Okay.
Anyway.
That's like you making a game on fashion and how to wear clothes.
Yeah!
Goddamn nudist. Anyway, let's...
Hey, man, I'm wearing other pants.
Like I said, I don't want to pick on the Kickstarter dudes for several reasons.
Yeah.
One of them is because they're peers.
Didn't we just pick on them for, like, the past 10 minutes?
Yeah, but I don't want to pick on them to an unreasonable extent.
Okay, fair enough.
Look, they're our peers in what we do, and their work should be judged by their customers, and, you know, and that's cool. And we're allowed to learn from their mistakes and from their, you know, wrong footing.
I just hope they do, too.
Because, I just want to say this. I can see why a lot of these dudes had trouble getting games published after a certain... I can see that.
I mean, if this was...
And I can see why people stop playing adventure games if this is the standard they came to expect from adventure games.
Yeah, if these were the designs that they brought to publishers and were like, hey, look, this is our game, I can see what these quote-unquote current marketplace realities were.
Yeah. And dude, look, I've played shit games and I've made shit games. And I've played shit games of all genres, but...
Yeah.
There's some really just offensively boring and bad... adventure games out there. Like, a bad first-person shooter, yeah, okay, you know, it's bad. I'll blast through this bit because, you know, oh, it's a bit unfair or it's too easy or anything like that. But a bad adventure game, I'm stuck trying to get into a sewer with a goddamn sliding tile puzzle. That is not even slightly fun. At least killing guys, you can go, like, oh, well, at least I'm shooting people in the head, you know. Not pushing tiles around ineffectively like a cat pouring at something in a glass jar trying to get it out.
Yeah. Yeah, that just makes you want to shoot yourself in the head.
Sliding tile puzzles suck. You know, mazes can be very frustrating. I love mazes, but I understand that mazes are frustrating to people. You know, like, adventure games have got, like, there's a thing that you guys were talking about that I pretty much stayed out of, but there's this fascination and this obsession with putting puzzles in games in places where they really do not belong.
When you say you guys, you mean, what, Andale and I?
No, when you were talking on Twitter the other day.
Oh, well, you may specify.
There's this obsession with putting puzzles a lot of the times in places where puzzles don't belong.
Yeah, there is.
You know? Like, we were talking about the Broken Sword remake for iPhone and stuff like that. And I haven't played it because I don't have an iPhone, and I've got Broken Sword on PC, and that's how I'd rather play it. But you told me...
Well, you can get the director's cut on Windows puzzles now.
I'm not going to. I've got Broken Sword. What do I need Broken Sword again for? Dude, I've got 5 copies of Baldur's Gate. I don't need 5 copies of any other games. Right?
So you can play sliding tile puzzles.
Yeah, and I jokingly said to you, oh, dude, I bet they put like a sliding tile puzzle to get into the sewer. As a joke to being like, an adventure game designer's dumb, and you said that they did. That's stupid.
I know.
Sewers don't have that. Sewers don't have that. There's no sewer in the entire world where people go, you know what's the best lock for this that no one will ever get through except the intended people? A sliding tile puzzle. No, because some kid can be just sitting there playing with his, like, transformer and then be like, oh, I put it onto the thing. I'll push these tiles around. Oh, I'm in the sewer. I'm dead. The crocodiles have hit me.
There's no crocodiles.
Charles Cecil has risen up from the murky, fetid depths and consumed me.
Okay, that seems more realistic than a crocodile, to be honest.
That's what Charles Cecil does. He lives in a sewer.
Oh, wow. Those are some harsh words.
That's true.
Sorry,
He's
Charles.
He's going to have to face the truth. No, I'm not sorry, Charles. Your secret's out, you reptilian freak.
Oh, my God. No, you can't. No, well, never mind. Anyway, let's move on.
I don't want to pick on our peers, but Charles Cecil is a crocodile. I'll say that. That's okay. All I'm saying. That's it. That's all the industry secrets I'm giving out in this podcast.
If there's one takeaway from today's podcast, it's that Charles Cecil is a crocodile.
That's correct.
Yeah. Now let's.
Have you looked at a picture of him? One look at him, I just go crocodile.
No, I haven't really looked at too many pictures of him, but I saw him speaking.
He's a funny guy to look at. Every time I see him, I just have a little giggle to myself.
He kind of looks like his hair is like sort of pulling his face back onto his head.
He looks like he should be a politician. Every time I see him,
he kind of does actually. Anyway, yeah, let's move on before we say.
I'm having fun on this topic.
Yeah, too much fun on this topic.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about other games, what they are secretly.
I wanted to go back and mention about Jim Walls. You know, you haven't played Police Quest 3, but at the beginning of Police Quest 3, there's, you know, Jim Walls is standing there with his foot on the police car.
I've seen the picture with him, like, standing on the police car with his foot.
He's doing, like, the Captain Morgan pose on the on the police car. And he's like, well, some of this stuff that you're going to encounter in this game is from my own life. And I'm like, well, let's see. This game is about a police officer who does some routine traffic stops, has to calm down a crazy guy in his underpants in a lake, then gets promoted...
Naked Jesus, as we fondly know him.
Yeah, Naked Jesus. Then gets promoted to detective and has to solve a ridiculous satanic cult drug cartel led by the brother of the guy that he was chasing in the first two games. Gee, I wonder which of those actually happened to Jim Walls. Oh, guess what? It was the naked guy in the lake.
Okay, I've got a question.
Yes.
Is Jim Walls married to a prostitute?
I don't think so.
Mm.
I don't know. I've never asked him. But I saw in an interview that he did, I believe it was with Richard Cobbett or someone, that he mentioned that the lake guy was the one thing that he took from his life that he actually put in the game.
Okay.
And probably calm
down people
too.
In their underpants, most of them myself.
Good to know.
So, I don't see that as a very special thing to put into a game. I mean, anyone could do that. Wow.
Yeah, well, hey. I'm in my underpants right now. Should you calm me down?
Yeah, I'm calming you down right now. Come on.
I don't need to be calmed down.
Now, listen.
No.
Hush now.
No.
We've got a podcast to do.
We're doing a podcast. Let's continue.
Let's. Okay.
Who else are we
talking
about? We've already said horrible things about Roberta Williams, so let's not talk about her.
I think you've said enough about Robert A. Williams.
I have. How about the Coles? What do you think about the Coles Kickstarter?
I don't want to say too much until people have played it, but it didn't look as Quest for Glory-like as it could have done. You know, when you consider you've got stuff like Heroine's Quest, you've got Quest for Infamy, you've got Mage's Initiation that are probably going to really appeal to the Quest for Glory fans among us.
Yeah, see, the Coles...
It's hard for me to believe that people are going to want the game that the Coles are making, but, you know, we'll see.
The Coles seem like really nice people, and I make terrible
puns. They seem like massive nerds, which is cool, because I can relate
to that. Yeah, they do seem like massive nerds, which is fine. And they love making puns, which I can relate to as well, because, you know, puns are fun and all that. But
yeah,
there's just something a little... I have to admit, like, I mean, they kind of creep me out a little bit. They have kind of intense stares when they look in the camera.
Well, I've got an intense stare.
Yeah, but you creep me out all the time.
I know. And?
But you don't dress like you're going to a Renaissance festival every day.
Dude, have you seen my robe?
Well, that's... Yeah. I guess you're right.
Mm.
Never mind.
Anyway.
You're a Cole. You're an honorary Cole.
Good.
Lori, Corey, and Benji Cole.
Yeah, I'm going to change my name to Rory.
Rory Cole.
It's me.
Anyway, yeah.
And I'm gonna just remake Quest for Glory 5 over and over and over and over and over and over.
Why? It doesn't need remaking. It's fine just the way it is. Somehow. Also, I think I just lost you. Yes, hello.
And are you ready?
Yeah, I guess so.
And I'm just gonna remake Quest for Glory 5 over and over and over again.
Yes, you said that over and over and over again.
Good. That's all I needed to say then. I'm ready to move on to the next subject of our podcast.
Good. Anyway, Yeah, the next subject of our podcast is something near and dear to my heart, because as you pointed out, I like to talk about things that I've been involved with, because, you know, it's topical.
Do you know what I want to say?
What?
I want to say, when it comes to this next topic mm-hmm. and discussing it, mm-hmm. I'm your guy.
I knew that. I was expecting either that or you don't look like a burglar to me.
Well, you don't look like a burglar to me, and I bet that the lover boy has given you the key.
Probably.
Mm. So you strike me as a very jealous woman.
You hush now.
Okay.
I had no idea the sheriff was married. What? What? What?
What? What?
What?
He's only your fiancé?
You've been engaged to him for 8 years? Fuck off. Anyway, so, as you know, I've been working on a game called... Yes, I know. I've been working on a game called...
I thought this podcast was about P-Knuckle.
P-Knuckle? You can't even say P-Knuckle.
Can't say P-Knuckle.
I know, I was referencing Quest for Glory 2. Anyway,
And I was referencing No One Lives Forever.
Good. We're nerds. Let's get over it. So, I've been working on a game, and my game has voice acting, or will have voice acting. But since my game is being published by Wadget Eye Games, there is a different method to getting voice acting. Usually, I just call up people I know on the internet. I'm like, hey, you, do some voice acting for me. But this time around, there's like a whole casting director, and I've been having to listen to auditions and stuff. And it's been a very interesting process. And, you know, you want the best, and I want the best.
Oh,
and
well, yeah.
It's an interesting thing. Sometimes people don't always get the best, and that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about voice acting in games. And
okay.
Good voice acting, bad voice acting. Because, honestly, if you're going to be playing a game that has gone out of its way to have voice acting. I mean, you can still get away with not really having voice acting in your game nowadays, but I think it's kind of become the standard.
It's the norm.
It is the norm. Yeah. It's come to be expected. So it's actually kind of, yeah, so when a game doesn't have voice acting, it's kind of like, oh my god, that doesn't have
voice acting. Yeah, voice acting is accepted as normality.
Yeah, I mean, I remember there
there's
was
a
like
game,
a...
There's a game with some voice acting.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah. But yeah, voice acting can really make or break a game in its quality, because
absolutely,
there's nothing that breaks the immersion more than bad voice acting. And unfortunately, it seems like games with bad voice acting are far outweigh the number of games with good voice acting. Because, I mean, honestly, it's like I just said, it's easy to call up any Joe Schmo and be like, hey, do some voice acting for me. And
sure.
Do that.
Well, like, a lot of the times, especially like in the early 90s, a lot of your voice actors were just like staff that worked at the game studio, and they were just like, here, we need a voice part.
I'm looking at you, Sierra.
Yeah, we had stuff like Dragon Sphere and Sierra games. Well, I played Eco Quest the other day, and I like Eco Quest a lot.
Yep.
I think it's fantastic, but the voice acting is hilarious.
Well, Eco Quest, King's Quest V, Space Quest IV, The Dagger of Amon-Ra, those were all voiced by Sierra employees.
There you go. So
it's quite
so
obvious.
there's this thing where it was like a lot of the times in the early days you had just like people doing the art that weren't artists.
Yeah,
if
sure.
you get somebody doing the art that's not an artist, what you're going to get is going to be inferior a lot of the time, you know. Same with voice acting. You get somebody who's right for the job, and then you get a better thing. Mm-hmm. I can name a lot of my favorite games, dude. I mean, Deus Ex, the first game. Yep. Man, that has terrible voice acting, but at the same time, it has terrible writing. Like, I love Deus Ex and everything like that, but the writing is hilarious, you know?
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, it's not even that. It's like the things people say, like... Like, you come around a corner and the policemen say things that no policeman would ever say. Like, you know, they totally call out their position and stuff like that on purpose to make you... And it's not even funny, like, in No One Lives Forever, where you, like, sneak up on people and hear their conversations, you know? Or, like, Thief. I love Thief, the third game, where you, like, you hear, like... like drunk guards and people like snoring in their sleep, like having stupid dreams. One of my favorite lines is the guy that's like drunk and he's like, oh, I thought I heard something. Must have been my echo. Which cracks me up every time. Like,
God.
But in Deus Ex, it's not even funny like the other games of that era. It's like, it's funny unintentionally because they say things no person would ever say. And all of the accents are terrible, like Russian and French and Australian.
I spilled my drink!
Where is Yevgeny? Like, it cracks me up, but...
How are mate? I'm the bartender in Hong Kong.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about politics randomly when you come to order a drink from me. We'll talk about world philosophies and the status of the economy. You just go, man, dude, seriously, first of all, that is the worst Australian accent. And look, I'm used to Australian accent. I love Jagger Alliance too. But, you know, but
I don't know, because I've never played
first person shooters didn't really have much talking in them.
Mm.
So we didn't expect that much.
Jesus.
Whereas now,
Deus Ex had a lot of talking in it. That must have been
crazy.
Yeah, but
I mean, it's peers.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, if most first-person shooters I know didn't have much talking, and then Deus Ex comes around, that must have been a huge shock for everyone at the time.
Well, dude, Deus Ex was revolutionary, man. It changed everything.
Yeah.
And I know it's hard to appreciate now, having played it now, you know. But at the time, like, man, it was crazy inspiring. Especially, like, I loved it. And I know not everybody liked it. But it just did stuff that no other first person shooter did. The same with, like, you know, every other game that's pushed boundaries. Deus Ex did that. It was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it wasn't the first game that had done it. It was definitely, like Isaac Newton said, if I've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. You know, there was all the stuff that came before it. But it was the one that sort of made people sit back and go, you know, hey, there's something to this, you know. And, yeah, it's like, because other people hadn't done much voice acting in first-person shooters at the time. I mean, you had a bit, but, you know, not to the extent that it's in that game. All of a sudden, people, like, you know, now first-person shooters have big voice acting budgets. You know, you can play games where you've got, you know, famous people in the games, mm-hmm. you know? So they've got actual actors. Mm. Like, you can play the Riddick games and you've got Exhibit and Vin Diesel in there. And I'm not saying that they're amazing actors. But, you know, you can play Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines and you should. And you've got Bender as Jack.
You've got Bender.
It's awesome, you know? It's like, so they're paying attention to that stuff now.
What was the first LucasArts game with voice acting? Was it Day of the Tentacle?
I think so.
Yeah. Because LucasArts always had professional, good voice actors.
LucasArts always had bigger budgets than Sierra, I'm sure. Probably. You know, they had George Lucas Pete.
That's true, they did.
He banking them. You know, they could afford all this cool stuff. You know, and obviously LucasArts were like, well, these games are making us good money.
Yeah.
You know?
I can't think of any LucasArts game that has bad voice acting, except maybe for The Dig.
I can think of, well, The Dig, compared to Sierra games, The Dig's got great voice acting.
It's not that it's bad, it's just that it's
a bit
like
flat,
said,
a bit
it's,
wooden.
Yeah, it's a bit wooden, but then again,
it holds up as, like, the characters, you know? You don't have people going, hi there!
No, but you have,
you know,
Boston.
These Brink, death crystals.
Brink, what just fell over the cliff there wasn't Brink. Brink died when he fell down the hole. That was a monster.
Dude, I'm getting nostalgic
crystals.
Here. Don't. I like The Dig.
I like The Dig too. You cheated me. I will kill you. Now Brink.
Oh, man.
Relax.
It was a great game.
I
don't care what he was.
What? Cheated. I don't know. I forgot what Brink says. You think Earth is on the other side of that door? I think nothing is on the other side of that. What did you just remember?
The voice acting from Loom.
Oh, man, the voice acting from Loom. That was the first voice acted LucasArts game.
It was.
Rise, son of Cigna!
That cracks me up.
No, but
every
see,
time,
but see, the problem with that was, even still, that was professional voice actors. It was just like theater voice actors that were way too dramatic.
Way too into it. It's like the drama teacher from Paranorman.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like, oh no, it's the third shadow.
It's come for me. It's like, it's like
you know who my favorite one is? Is Bishop Mandible when he's like, only 6 hours? I specifically requested 8.
It's very like hammed up.
Oh yeah.
And which I guess kind of suits Loom a little bit.
I mean, it's using music from a ballet, for God's sakes. It's pretty it's pretty
so
theatrical.
It kind of suits Loom, but at the same time,
man,
it cracks me up, dude.
You know what would be awesome to see? You know how those kids did that stage production of The Secret of Monkey Island?
Sure.
I would love to see like an overblown stage production of Loom. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, Loom would fit perfectly.
It would.
Like, way more than any other LucasArts game. It's
yeah.
really poetic.
Yeah, it would be amazing.
I'd like to see the kid that has to be like the tornado. Dressed
well,
up as like
not done
cardboard
by,
twister and just like spins around until he gets dizzy.
I don't mean done by kids. I mean done like, you know, actually like Spider-Man turned off the dark with like special effects and like wires and stuff.
Okay, like Jerry Springer the musical.
Yeah, exactly, like actual production well, I don't know if that had actual production values, but yeah, like Loom.
Dude, that's
the stage show. That would be amazing.
Okay,
and then the dragon would be like, I'll be blah 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 blah, I'm a dragon. Fire!
LucasArts also had some funny voice acting. You know what the worst LucasArts voice acting is?
What?
Is Lago Legrand in the
Oh, man!
Because he was just badly cast by people who obviously didn't know what Lago was all about.
I don't know that we can... I mean, yeah, I guess that was kind of...
It was LucasArts!
It was, but it was their last real game. And it was... It's a weird situation, that one, because... Yeah, it's just slapping a coat of paint on an old game, and...
Yeah, but unlike the first game, they actually tried.
I don't know, there's some spotty voice acting in the first game, too.
Yeah, but...
Like, I know they brought back most of the people from Curse, and Curse had a really good cast, but, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Curse has got good voice acting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so LucasArts weren't perfect.
Where do you think you're going, Fancy Pants?
Yeah, that's nothing at all what Lago looks or sound or should sound like.
See, the problem with talking about voice acting is that I'm going to do all the voices because I like doing voices. But anyway,
So voice acting. I've done voice acting.
You have.
But the funny thing about that was I was like, dude, there's no way you want me to act in a game because I've got an Australian accent.
Well,
and Australian accents show.
Well,
quite. Especially mine, you know, it made me laugh. People were, like, playing through Epiphany, listening to the commentary, and you've got all these New York accents, and then mine comes along like, g'day, let's talk about drawing pictures, eh? I'm going to talk about Photoshop. That's a program that I use on my computer.
Well, what I did, right, was I got my sheep dolly, and I stuck a tail in the paint, and then I put it on the paint canvas, and that's what I used for my brush, you see. Fair dinkum, mate.
And that's how I talk. So that's how it comes across in a game, you know?
Yeah,
I can try and do an accent for a little bit, but I'm not a professional voice actor. I'm never going to be able to, like, hold it down properly.
Well.
You know? So unless you want, like, a really awful Australian person in your game, like, g'day, I'm in a bar in Hong Kong.
Well...
I got a better accent than that, dude, but that's because I am Australian, you know?
Well, you did pretty well in Ben Chandler Paranormal Investigator in Search of the Sweet Stick.
Yeah, but that's because I was playing myself. That was the easiest role. All I did was read out lines.
But you weren't even, because you were like a fake... You were like, I see, this is a thing today. You don't talk like that.
That's how I talk when I walk around the place. A little bit. I mean, well, I have... You have to pretend things are happening to you that aren't really happening. That's acting.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, oh, that is a bush.
Stop looking at me when I'm not wearing underpants.
Well, you put your webcam on, I'm going to do it. I've done voice acting for a few different people, but it's never been huge parts. And, you know, I screamed the whole introduction of Monkey 506's Ocean Spirit Dennis game.
Yes, you did.
And that was excellent. I enjoyed doing that. I, like, just roared my head off.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was great.
Krusty the Clown.
Well, it wasn't really Krusty the Clown. He cast me as Krusty. I'm like, okay, look, I'm going to tell you this. That I cannot sound like Krusty the Clown. So it was like, oh, just do whatever. So I just roared my head off and sent it to him.
Yep.
And it was like, yeah, that'll do. That's excellent. I love it. So I just sent him that.
I think that was... Like, I think that was like one of the first times I had heard your voice. And I was like, wow, this guy likes screaming.
Yeah, well, you know, I was a goth kid. I listened to a lot of metal when I was in high school.
I've done my fair share of voice acting too, and you know,
you've done a lot of voice acting.
I have, and you know, some roles I've found easier than others. Some roles have been terrible. I mean, you know, I'm talking about Dwayne Munn, and that wasn't my finest hour.
I think it was your fun. I think it's fantastic.
Uh-huh.
I think because it stands out as being interesting to me.
I don't know. My most comfortable role, I think, has been Sam Durkin because it's just easiest.
It's just you, but a little bit lower.
Yeah, with a stupid accent. But yeah. I had a lot of fun.
Strong accent, you know?
No, well, I didn't want to be over the top with it because that would be stupid. But I don't know if you've gone back and played Blackwell with the with the bloopers on, but I had some fun with you know.
Dude, you showed me all your bloopers before, Tom. You were giggling about it excitedly.
Yeah, it was fun. I liked it.
You love your bloopers.
But myself is what I love. Mmm, baby, come here. No, that's creepy. Anyway.
It is creepy. Don't do that.
Sorry. I'll turn my webcam off next time, too. Voice acting, it can, like we said, it can make or break a game. It's tricky, because, like, I sometimes wonder, I mean, being caught up in the process myself now, it can be kind of overwhelming, I guess, because, I mean, I personally haven't felt overwhelmed yet, because, like I said, I have the great Shelley Shenoy, the casting director, who is...
Oh, Shelley, good on you, mate.
Yeah, part of her job is screening the auditions before she sends me the ones that she considers the strongest ones, so I pretty much, she separates the wheat from the chaff, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, even still, though, I've gotten quite a few auditions for... I've only gotten auditions for three main characters so far. But, like, it's difficult. Like, one of them, the main character, Alfie, like, you know, I heard about three or four different auditions, and it was crystal clear to me which choice I should make. So that was easy. But other characters have been a little bit more difficult, and especially one I have, like, five callbacks for. So I'm going to really have to sit down and pick which one I want. And I guess sometimes it's easy to have things slip through the cracks and just be like, you know, and it comes to the point where, like, if you've cast somebody and they're just, unless they're just like not getting it at all, I guess it's less trouble to just say, hey, you know, let's just stick with this person as it is.
You're sort of going with the person you dislike the least, you mean?
No, I'm just talking about, like, you know, if you get an audition or something, let's say, and the person sounds good in their audition, and then when they come in to record, they just aren't getting it, and they suck. Mm. You know, it's sometimes, I guess, budget-wise, would probably be easier to say, well, you know, let's just stick to them, rather than have to go through the whole recasting process again. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's maybe one reason why you get bad voice acting, because, I mean, I can't think of who would sit there in good conscience and listen to some of this stuff and just be like, yeah, that'll do.
Yeah, I think, how many lines, when you ask someone to audition for a character, how many lines do you give them?
Usually three or four.
Three or four, and you give them a quick summary of the character?
You give them a quick summary of the character. I was asked to give a picture, a character portrait of the character, which helps
as
well.
Yeah, I think that would help, yeah.
And the three or four lines that you pick are usually... You usually pick ones that show range or just...
Yeah, but even so, over the course of three or four lines, it's hard to get to know a character because characters hopefully have some depth, you know?
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I know a lot of us write stereotypes and everything, but even still, you know...
Don't look at me like that.
Okay. But, like... You know what I mean, right? You've got this character who develops over the course of a game, hopefully, and, you know, and they interact with people and they have a range of emotions. And trying to show that to someone and go, this is the entire character in three or four lines, that's a pretty tall thing for people to pick up on.
Yeah, it really is.
In my opinion. Like, I don't have the greatest deal of experience with voice acting because in projects where I've worked on it where there's been voice acting, it's usually been handled by other people. And, you know, but I know what I like in a game and I can imagine, like, you know, some of the issues people would have with trying to get someone to sort of to feel what they feel about a character and translate that into to think. It's a little bit like painting art for someone. You have to interpret what they see.
Yeah.
And the thing is this...
And sometimes, I mean, if you mess up, or not mess up, but if you just, if you don't provide exactly what you're looking for, sometimes the interpretation can be mistaken. Like, for example, one of the characters that I've gotten auditions for, you know, he's meant to be, he's meant to be, I in the description I wrote, born with a silver spoon in his mouth and spoiled rotten ever since. And, you know...
Which makes him sound like a total jerk.
Exactly. But since I know the character and I know that's not what he's like, you know...
He's not a jerk. So
he's not a jerk. Yeah. So, of course, all my auditions read him as a complete snob. And I was like, I see what the matter is here. It's, you know, it's my fault. So I had to amend it for the callbacks that I put in a line saying, he's spoiled, but you don't... The player doesn't want to punch him in the face.
Right. Yeah, that's... So. That's the thing there. You've got like... If you only give, like, one facet of a character for people to work with, they're probably going to work up that facet.
Exactly. You know? And it's totally not the actor's fault. It's just, you know, if you're given not that much to work with, then, you tend to lean more towards, just what you interpret. Not the stereotype, but just the archetype more than anything.
Yeah, the shape of the character that they're meant to be portraying, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not up with the. We should have had Miranda on. Should have got Miranda. She does voice acting.
We
haven't had her on the podcast. No. Anyway, but yeah. So there's this obligation, I would say, in my opinion, for you as someone who's trying to get people to read your character for you. There's this obligation to go, this is the character. You know, this is what I want. This is not just give them an idea of who the character is, but also an idea of who they're not. Like, yes, they do this, and yes, they're like that, but they're not a jerk. They're not. You're not going to want to punch them in the face, as you said. Or you know, they might be an evil person, but they're not like.
Well, unless you're making a ridiculous comedy game,
and we're not. So, no.
Exactly.
You know. And a lot of the times, like, in games that you're working on currently and that I'm working on currently, they're quite serious in intent and in tone. Mm-hmm. And having that in there can really, like, having bad voice acting. Like, man, there's so many games. Like, The Whispered World, I wanted to like it so much. And it wasn't just the puzzles that put me off, but Chadwick. And I'm just like, I don't want to play a game as Chadwick.
Well, that's an important thing, too, that I think... A lot of people don't realize for certain games that I can think of.
Chadwick's sad.
Yeah. People don't realize, especially, like, you know, in games... My game's a little different in the sense that I still have narrator text for all the look descriptions. So, you know, you don't have the character describing everything he sees. But you have to realize that your main character, your player's going to be listening to that voice for the majority...
An entire game.
The entirety of the game. That's like, you know... hours worth of this voice. So you don't want a voice that's going to grate on their nerves or just make them hate the character. I'm looking at
some voices you'll get used to, other voices you will not get used to.
Let's talk about Runaway.
Let's talk about Runaway. Runaway, I would say Runaway has many flaws in my extremely judgmental opinion. Runaway is a very flawed game.
Yep.
But Brian, is it Brian Basco?
It is Brian Basco.
Brian Baskin-Robbins is Brian Bosco.
Yeah.
Brian Bosco is not well voiced, at least in the English release.
That's the thing.
And here's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
My friend and sometimes, you know, he and I have worked on games together, Captain Nemo, loves Runaway. He loves it.
Yeah.
And he and I has had discussions and we're like, I'm just like, dude, I cannot see how you like this game. It's a piece of trash. It's trash. One of my friends got the game, installed it, played about 5 minutes of it, ejected the CD and threw the CD in the trash. If that's not a strong reaction to a game, I don't know what is. Runaway is bad. And the sequel's worse. And I haven't played the third game, but apparently it's the best one.
Yeah.
Every time I see the thing, I just want to run away from it. It's an appropriate name.
Yep.
And Brian sounds like an asshole.
Yep.
And the worst thing about Brian is, for me, is that he turns from uber nerd to uber cool guy in the space of a single game. He goes from, like, I'm Brian to, like, I'm cool, you know, sunglasses and, like, tank top and all. Just shit.
He doesn't even change his voice, though.
He doesn't, though.
What I love too, is that, like, he progressively starts, like, his he starts off wearing, like, you know, a typical nerd outfit, like his pants with his shirt tucked in with his long sleeves and his glasses. And then, like, he gets to the desert and he loses his glasses and he's like, well, it's a good thing I really don't need my glasses. I just kind of wear them for show or something, like some lame excuse.
And then he says, I forget.
Yeah, he's. I remember.
Long time.
That's what it stuck out to me because it was so stupid. He was like, yeah, I just wear my glasses for show more than anything else or something like that. Or like, my eyesight's not so bad.
Dumb.
And like, as he gets progressively more, like, beat up and stuff, like, his clothes start getting, like, tighter and stuff. And then he's, like, wearing a little tight t-shirt with shorts and it's like, okay, so you're telling me that this nerdo is secretly, like, a buff guy with no glasses and, like...
He got a six-pack over the course of 2 hours.
He did! I know! He learned the one weird trick from the housewife.
He did, man! It works!
It did.
It works. Eat one food and you'll never have to work out again.
Exactly. Well, he doesn't eat any food throughout the course of the game. Maybe that's
what happened. Maybe he had a six-pack under all your, like, nerdy flab.
Maybe.
And it just kind of finally wore through.
I don't know. But anyway, the thread that I think you were going on that you didn't get to complete was about...
That I didn't get to complete was that he played in English one day.
Yeah.
And he came on the chat thing, he's like, what have they done to my game? I hate these people. And I'm like, now you know how I feel.
Yeah, that's totally a problem of localization because, as you know, Pendulo Studios is a Spanish studio. And I have a friend who is from Spain and she played the Spanish version. And she told me that Brian's voice in that is like... Hola, me llamo Brian Vasco. So, yeah.
Cuidado.
Yeah, exactly. So,
ven a mi fiesta esta noche.
Sí, la ropa no es requerida. Yeah, so basically Brian's like all deep macho tough guy voice there. So
that's excellent, man. Yeah. I love that.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, voice acting like that can just...
I think Pendulo suffer from localization problems, and I also think Daedalic, you know, play a new beginning, and the voice acting, it's hard to believe it. And I wonder if, like, this is always a problem I had. I know you and I have discussed translations in the past. I always worry if people are like, let us translate your game. I always worry because a lot of my writing requires, like, jokes
little
wordplay, and I worry that people won't get that and won't put that in, you know, what seems like an excellent line in English, probably not going to translate so well into, you know, any other language.
Absolutely.
I'm sure, like, there's some really good translations, but how do I know? How do I know that?
Unless you have, your stuff is pretty one-to-one where it'll carry over from language to language, yeah, you're going to run into difficulties because...
But who writes like that?
That's the thing. No one does.
Everyone puts, like, wordplay in.
Yeah, exactly. You can't... Yeah.
Everyone who enjoys writing, anyway.
It's really... You know? Yeah, it is very...
Language
very
is a really powerful tool as a writer, and to just...
Yeah.
Trust someone else to interpret your work right is really daunting.
Yeah.
I've only had, like, 3 of my games translated.
So. I think I've had, like, maybe... 2 or 3, but they've been into German, so I have no idea whether they did a good job or not.
Yeah, I had one in German, one in Russian, and one in French. Yeah. But
actually, somebody, you know, as a student project, she translated Ben Jordan 7 into Spanish, and I played a little bit of it. But yeah, it, you know.
Well, that's one you can actually judge because you've actually got knowledge of the language,
yeah,
and you're fluent in it as well. There's another thing: knowing a language and being fluent
is a
problem. You see a lot of people like. They know how to speak English, but they don't know how English people speak, or how American people speak, or how Australian people speak.
I'm looking at you, David Cage. Anyway,
we could talk a lot of. Let's talk. No, that's
not. No, that's not. Yeah, but yeah, that's
one thing.
That's
I'll
what
say.
Always.
One
that's what always
say.
Gets me.
If go you've ahead. Got American characters, do not cast people with French accents to voice act them.
Yes, and as I've said, don't have them say "gonna" or "ain't" because that's ain't gonna work. Because Americans don't talk like that. Anyway, well, not all of them.
Australians do.
Yeah. That ain't gonna work, mate.
That ain't gonna work, you drongo. Struth.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway, yeah, like, just to jump... Oh, hello, bass. The translation thing too.
Man, pump out the jams.
Yeah, because we've kind of gone off on a tangent, but yeah, it always. Oh, I know, really. It always gets me when like people contact you to get to translate the game, and they message you in broken English, and they're like, "I would please like to translate game of yours into Turkish," and I'm just like, "How the hell are you going to translate my game if you can not if you one of the languages is not." You're obviously not fluent in one of the languages.
Yeah.
I remember... I
think the same with, like, voice acting when it becomes localized, you know?
Yeah.
I think you should get, like, you should pay a lot of attention. I remember The Witcher, they had, like, Steve Ince work on the localization, and it came across pretty well, you know? It's still a little awkward in spots, because I'm sure there's certain stuff.
Well, yeah.
Like, but it actually, like, I was like, hey, this is actually pretty good, considering it was written in Polish.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to feel. I feel sorry for voice actors who are given scripts that have been poorly translated because, like, just having to read some of that dialogue. I know that a lot of stuff anyway is out of context when you record for a game, but just to have something that's out of context and poorly written, translated grammatically or whatever.
That's just total.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I mean, it gets to the point where you're probably, you know, you're in it, you're there, and you know, you're just there for the paycheck and whatever. But yeah. I mean, wow.
That's an interesting.
My point. Favorite
and one that you were talking about with Ashton Reyes earlier about writing. It helps it when you're writing to read out your lines of dialogue.
Oh, absolutely. Because sometimes
as you're writing,
and
that probably I would suggest helps your voice actors because if you've tested them. You know if it works or not. And as a voice actor, there's no doubt things that you have to say. There's going to be lines that you have to say where you're like, how the hell am I supposed to say this? How does this work, you know? So, yeah.
I think what helps, too, is I don't know how often it happens. I don't how involved the designers are. But if the writer is there for the voice acting sessions... I think that would probably be an immense help. Like, I remember when Dave was doing Emerald City Confidential, he had voice actors here in New York, and he also had people from Bay Area Sound. And, I mean, they could have easily just, you know, done it on their own and sent Dave the stuff for approval or whatever, but they would actually Skype Dave and patch him into the recording session so he could listen and he could direct the voice actors. Which I think is a big help because, I mean, obviously he wrote the lines. He knows how they should be.
In that scene.
Exactly. And that's one of the advantages, too, of me being here now and, like, being able to sit in for the voice acting for A Golden Wake. Like, you know, I'll be able to be there and I'll be able to direct. And
So I think there's also a point, though, and Dave said this to me. He was talking about Primordia, actually, and he said... He said that Mark had made notes for every single line at one point, Mark the writer, which I totally understand, but he was like, man, they're actors. Let them act. You know? They know what they're... Like, so I think there's a point where you have to let your artist be an artist
as well. Absolutely.
You know? So I'd say it's a two-way street.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying... Direction. Yeah, I'm not saying that the writer should be there and be like, no, you didn't do it right. It has to be like this. But... Right. At the same time, you should, you know, there's not as much of a chance of that disconnect of the, like, for example, even like I just gave the example of the snobby character, like, you know, I was like, oh, he sounds too snobby. And Dave was like, oh, if I can stick my nose in, I like this actor's reading better for this character for, you know, I like this actor's reading better than this one's. Whereas I had chosen one, I had said about one and I was like, yeah, no, I like his voice. But he read him as too snobby. And Dave was like, oh, I totally interpreted the character as too snobby too, you know? So, like, in that case, I had to step in and be like, no, you know, that's not how he should be, so...
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Good.
So there's that. But anyway.
I wonder what Ron Gilbert thought of Largo Legrand's voice.
Oh, God. I don't know, they don't talk about it in the commentary, that woefully underwhelming commentary that they hyped up so much and only ended up being, like, half an hour. That's a real shame. Oh well.
Never mind. It's done now.
Don't drink your paint, please.
I haven't drank my paint. I'm washing my brush, sir. I need to get some clean water, but that's fine. I'll soldier on with dirty water at the moment.
Okay. You don't have any tea, do you?
No, I had a cup, but I finished it, and I didn't put one dab of paint in it.
I'm proud of you. You're learning.
Thank you. It only happened once. Just happened to be on a podcast when I did it.
Yeah, now the whole world knows and keeps doesn't let you live it down.
Yeah, man. David Cage keeps being like, Ben, I listen to your podcast, and the only thing I'm actually upset about is that you're drinking paint, mate. Stop that.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, mon ami.
Are you kidding me? Have you played any of David Cage's games? He obviously drinks paint all the goddamn time.
Yeah, actually, he's trying to hit me up with like some special stuff.
Oh, by the way, I was talking about Beyond Two Souls the other day, and I have to tell you about it after we finish the podcast because it's got another one of those delightful Dave. Actually, as far as delightful David Cage plot twists go, it's actually not as horrible, but it's still pretty bad.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
After Heavy Rain, I'm pretty much expecting anything.
He really has become the M. Night Shyamalan of game design.
He's an idiot!
On that note,
M. Night Shyamalan. Actually made one film that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true.
Unbreakable was a crap.
Yeah, they were all over. Anyway, we should probably end
the
podcast.
And I've got a friend that loves it.
We should end the podcast because we're getting into naughty territory.
Let's just pick on everyone.
No!
You know who I want to pick on now? That guy's a total coward.
No, that's not what we do. We're likable, friendly guys.
No, we're not. We're assholes. Ponch, you're a cow. Moo. I'm sorry, Ponch. I'm sorry, buddy. But yeah, check out the AGS Bake Sale. Don't forget.
Yeah, don't forget to check out the AGS Bake Sale. Speaking of voice acting, Blue Lobe Inc. features voice acting by many AGSers, including myself doing a terrible Cedric. Good. So if you like hearing me doing terrible Cedrics, go check out Blue Lobe Inc.
Dude, your Cedric is spot on. It's not terrible at all. It's the fact that the character is terrible that makes it terrible.
Well, the character... Cedric is like the character. Perfect. The character in Blue Lobe Inc. has been redeemed, so... He's... I don't want to spoil it, but yeah, it seems pretty funny from what I've heard. Check it out,
guys. Play it. You can hear voice acting by Francisco. You can. It's
not
it's
just me, funny. But others, cool. other
right.
AGSers.
Well, you know, I'm trying to tie it into the podcast. You love segues and shit.
Yeah, but people hear me enough on the podcast, so they don't want to go out and hear me.
No,
more.
They want more podcasts.
If you
didn't get enough, if you're like, man, I need another podcast, and you want to hear Francisco's voice more,
then go play the AGS Big Sale.
Man, at least one of the games. That's it. Our work here is done.
Yeah, we're the best salesman ever.
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, speaking of sales pitches, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is @Ben_304. What is yours, Grundislav Games?
Mine is @GrundislavGames. And if you want to follow the podcast...
@hotmail.com.
Or Gmail. But, yeah, take your pick. it's actually not GrundislavGames at Hotmail.
I know!
Don't lead the people astray.
I emailed you previously in my life.
I know, but if people start sending people... I know we are, but if people start...
Come on.
Come. Bonzo.
Bonzo's a clown!
That's exactly why I called you that. I didn't know, but I made a fortuitous choice. Anyway, follow the Blue Cup Tools podcast, which you probably already do, at BCT, that's capital BCT, _ podcast. And subscribe on iTunes also if you want to see our funny pictures with the shrimp on the Barbie and Paul Hogan and Blue Cup Tools and us dressed as Bogans.
You can buy our merchandise at www.sellyoursoulstobluecuptoolspodcast.com. Whatever it takes to do to get the money, you know. You can make a sex tape. Nobody's done one of those for a while. We used to have lots of them, and now nobody does them anymore.
Yeah, well, I've been... You know how sometimes things trend on Twitter, and you're like... Can I make a really grim confession?
Please.
Every time I see like a celebrity's name trending on Twitter, I click on it just to see if they've died. Because that's usually what happens.
I click on it to see if they've done a sex tape.
Oh.
And well, I've been disappointed for a long time.
Actually,
come on, guys, get on with it. Well, hey, there's a cage to do one.
Are you kidding me? It'll all be QuickTime events.
Well,
interact with the new thing from Quantic Dream.
Oh, Jesus.
I would buy that. I would.
Oh, just, really?
Just to make him fail.
There's already sex scenes in Quantic Dream games. Yeah, but, you don't need an entire game David full of them.
Man, because you know how he does God. The... You
he
know
comes
how
out at the beginning of... In, yeah, he comes out at the beginning of Fahrenheit. And
yeah.
then he dances.
We could mod the game so that
oh,
he's like...
no. No, so that he's Lucas in the sex scene.
So that I could make him fail. So that zombie David Cage could fail at romance.
Oh my God, that's the worst idea I've heard in my entire life.
Good. I'm glad we've ended this podcast on a happy note.
And I've heard some pretty bad ideas in my
time. Well, dude, you talk to me daily.
Yeah, you're right. But there, oh, but I was going to tell you, well, I don't need to tell you about the sex tape on the podcast. I'll tell you afterwards. Anyway, bye.
Our listeners are curious.
No, they're not curious. They don't need to know. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.